boots and shoes. You can hang back or fight your best on the front line. Sing a little bit of these working man blues. Well, I'm sailing on back, ready for the long haul, tossed by the winds and the seas. I'll drag them all down.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Bill Fletcher Jr., a longtime Labor, racial justice, and international activist. He is an editorial board member and columnist for BlackCommentator.com and a senior scholar for the Institute for Policy Studies. Bill Fletcher is the co-author of Solidarity Divided, The Crisis in Organized Labor, and A New Path Towards Social Justice. And he has an article at the Zinn Educational Project, Claiming and Teaching the 1963 March on Washington. Welcome to Background Briefing, Bill Fletcher, Jr.
Glad to be on board.
And this week, of course, we saw the 50th anniversary of the famous March on Washington, and so much focus has been on that, as well as the paradox of celebrating Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream at the same time going to war with Syria, but that notwithstanding, what did you take away from this week?
I think that this was a missed opportunity, actually. I think that it was important to commemorate the March on Washington, but the problem was that the commemoration was in general too reflective. I know that sounds paradoxical. It wasn't looking towards the future enough. And I think that we're at a critical moment where we need to be resetting our sights, and we need to be focused about where we're going. So the in addition to that, the march, in remembering the march in 63, there is this demythologizing that has to happen. And not enough of that took place this week, this past week. And I think that the march, I mean, people continue to refer to it as Dr. King's March. I was on a few interviews where people would say, you know, Dr. King's March. Well, no, it wasn't Dr. King's March. He was one of the speakers. He was not the principal organizer of the march. He gave a speech that history remembers, and actually it remembers only part of that speech and not the entirety of the speech. And the entire speech was really quite powerful. So I think that there were some real challenges in the way that this was conceptualized.
Well, indeed, on this Labor Day, Bill Fletcher, Jr., I mean, we could think about, I think, and you have written about this, about divorcing civil rights from economic justice, which appears to have been happening here in terms of the commemoration, and so much of the original commemoration was, and so much of Martin Luther King's speeches were about economic justice. And my sense is that we in this country have so much more in common across the racial lines than we have that divides us if we think in terms of economic justice, or more accurately, in terms of economic justice, where we are in a country where we have a bunch of plutocrats who've captured our politics and who control our economy.
Well, you know, I think that we have two problems. Social movements have these two problems, and they're recurring. We have economic justice movements that frequently ignore race and gender, and we have movements around race and gender that frequently ignore economic justice. So what's interesting about the origins of the March on Washington in 63 is that the origins of this flow from black labor. It was the Negro American Labor Council that originally conceptualized a March on Washington. And their argument, this was an organization that was led by A. Philip Randolph, and their argument was that there was this discussion around civil rights, constitutional rights, but that there was insufficient attention to this growing economic crisis that was afflicting the black workers. So they wanted to have this march, which was originally going to be in October of 1963. when King and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference found out about it, they decided to fuse their efforts, and thus we had the August 28th March on Washington of 1963. But the problem recurs that at different points there are these victories, very important ones, in the realm of civil and constitutional rights, but the struggle around economic justice wasn't linked to that. And this is a point, as you said, King always recognized, but he especially after 1965-66 started to rethink strategy and the whole notion of a poor people's campaign, a poor people's march, reflected the sense that the energy of what had been called the civil rights movement needed to be refocused in a way that better linked racial justice with the issue of economic justice and human and global justice, for that matter.
Now, is there a paradox here, Bill Fletcher, Jr., in another paradox, since we're talking about paradoxes, that we have a black president and a black attorney general, and we just had the Supreme Court under Justice John Roberts strike down the Voting Rights Act from 1965, the pre-clearance part of that act that prevented much of the voter suppression that we've witnessed, and now, of course, it's open season on voter suppression, particularly in the South, that in these states that were normally required to pre-clear, and they've jumped out of the gate right away with voter suppression laws. So we know what the results have been, but the rationale for John Roberts and the conservatives on that court was that we don't have any problems anymore. It's all been healed. That, you know, the civil rights movement has succeeded. So is that a problem here, where you have white conservatives telling us civil rights have succeeded and therefore we don't have to do anything? I mean,
yes. What's interesting about their decision is that they didn't. It's sort of like Humpty Dumpty says, "Words mean what I want them to mean, nothing more or less." So it's when you look at the Supreme Court's decision around voting rights, what the majority basically said was that you have to prove that these states are still problematic. Now, that sounds reasonable, except in the hearing, it was proven. The advocates for the voting rights had loads of information and data about the types of problems that exist when it comes to total voter enfranchisement. The Supreme Court majority chose to ignore that. So they basically worded things in a way that anyone that's not doing any research might say, well, that seems like a reasonable position, when in reality what they were doing was striking this blow against voting rights and making it that much more difficult. Now, part of what that means is that when we go forward, it's not just about, you know, trying to get the Congress to revise the act. Between now and whatever the Congress changes, we're going to have to do massive voter registration. We have to make sure that everyone has the proper identification, et cetera. We have to anticipate further voter suppression efforts. But that said, what, and this goes full circle to the issue of the commemoration of the march, I would put to you that that we should be focusing now on the necessity for a third Reconstruction. And, you know, when you think about the period of Reconstruction after the Civil War, it was an attempt to move this country towards a genuine democracy. There were major advances, and they were beaten back by a wealthy clique in the South in its alliance with industrial capitalists in the North. And we went for years in a very repressive situation. Then the 1950s, 1960s emerges, and it's often referred to as a second Reconstruction. Great legislation passed on racial justice, on gender, on a number of things. There were expansions on democracy. And then there was a pushback. Some of the same forces that were pushing back in the 19th century pushed back again. And this time it's called the white backlash or the male backlash or both. And we have been fighting this defensive battle ever since. What I think we have to understand is that we can't keep fighting on the defensive. We have to reset our sights. And our sights need to be set on a notion of a third reconstruction, where we push through a fight around consistent democracy and expansion on voting rights rather than contraction, rather than being defensive. A fight around the environment and the survivability of the human species, the taking on of this vast polarization of wealth, in fact, fighting to democratize the economy. We need a third reconstruction. And what one would have hoped would have been that the commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the 1963 March would have been essentially a clarion call for a movement towards a third reconstruction.
And again, Bill Fletcher Jr. is a longtime labor, racial justice, and international activist. He is on the editorial board and a columnist for blackcommentator.com and a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies and the co-author of Solidarity Divided, The Crisis in Organized Labor and a New Path Towards Social Justice. So on this Labor Day weekend, Bill Fletcher Jr., in terms of a third reconstruction, doesn't it make more sense, though, to make it across racial lines, given that Latinos are the fastest growing demographic and their votes are going to be suppressed as much, and that in economic terms, poor whites represent the majority of those living in poverty and on food stamps. So it seems to me that the left in this country can't fall into the trap that the right uses racial division as a subtext to divide and conquer. There's no question, for example, to my mind, that this Republican war on Obamacare is driven by the racial racist implication that you poor white people are going to be subsidizing a bunch of lazy blacks and Hispanics. That's the message they're selling. Don't you think we on the left have to have a different and much more inclusive and, frankly, more subtle message?
We absolutely do. It's not just cross-racial. I think that the framework that Jesse Jackson raised in the mid-'80s, mid to late 80s, of a rainbow coalition is precisely right. We need to think in terms of building a majoritarian bloc to transform this country. And that's precisely what we need to be doing. And so when I'm thinking about a third reconstruction, don't get me wrong, I'm not thinking about just simply what happens to African Americans. But what I would say is that when African Americans have been on the move, democracy has expanded in this country. You know, the fight against slavery, the fight against to move Reconstruction, the period from the 1930s through the early 70s, you know, and the African American impulse there, it expanded democracy. And so I think that we African Americans have a pivotal role to play, but we can't do this ourselves, and we have to have a message, a story that actually talks about the necessity for the majority of the people in this country, the people that work, the people that want to work, that need to work in order to live, as opposed to the plutocrats, as you said, the necessity for them to come together to change this country in its fundamentals. That's what King understood. His Poor People's Campaign and the Poor People's March was not a march asking for pity and charity. He was actually looking for a movement that would transform the very essence of this country. And we need to pick up where he left off.
And do you see that happening, or what do you see, Bill Fletcher Jr., as the core organizing principle around that? Frankly, when I try to cover what's going on in Washington, the one refrain that I get constantly, no matter what the issue I'm covering, comes back to campaign finance, because the plutocrats have bought the Congress, and that's why they leave no billionaire behind, and the rest of us are getting shafted. So that's the reality that we have in America today. What would you consider to be the core organizing principle on this Labor Day of a third Reconstruction?
Well, I distinguish between the core organizing principle and the core issues. So I'd say that the core organizing principle is that we need to build a majority that transforms this country, that no one group can do it by itself, that no one group can fight for the best terms for itself and leave everyone else behind. That, to me, is the core principle of where we go. And related to that is that we are currently divided. We should have no illusions about that. We, meaning the people at the bottom, the bottom 90%, we are divided. We are badly divided. And so what we have to do is we have to fight to unite. And I say that because there's a lot of people that say, well, we have to be careful about the issues we raise. We don't want to raise divisive issues. And usually what they mean by that is we don't want to talk about race. We don't want to talk about gender and things along those lines. And I would argue in response that, no, we're already divided. What we have to figure out is how do we unite? So the second piece is, what are some of the core issues? And I'd say that there are several areas that we have to really look at. One is the environmental catastrophe. Will humanity make it out of the 21st century civilized or in caves? That's the basic question. A second thing, the polarization of wealth and the lack of democracy when it comes to the economy. The third thing is the inequality that exists at the racial and ethnic level. And what does that mean? And finally, the issue of gender. And are we going to take a stand against what I've called political misogynism, this incredible attack on women, this attack on lesbians, gays, the LGBTQ? Do we take a stand for that? And all of this ultimately falls under the rubric of, we need to be building a movement for consistent democracy, the expansion of democracy, as opposed to just resisting the attacks or fighting for piecemeal reforms.
Well, Bill Fletcher, I very much appreciate you joining us here on this Labor Day weekend. It's been a very interesting discussion, and I thank you for it.
Thank you. It's just an absolute pleasure. Take care.
You too. Again, I've been speaking with Bill Fletcher, Jr., a longtime labor, racial justice, and international activist. He's an editorial board member and columnist for blackcommentator.com and a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies. Bill Fletcher, Jr. is the co-author of Solidarity Divided, The Crisis in Organized Labor, and A New Path Towards Social Justice. And he has an article at the Zinn Education Project, Claiming and Teaching the 1963 March on Washington. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcast at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.